When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to Mystic Lounge with Alan B. Smith. Rebroadcast on the Onyx Network. Thursdays at 11 p.m. Pacific. Fridays at 2 a.m. Eastern.
However you are.
Oh. There you go.
Oh my gosh. I just did that whole introduction and nobody heard. I didn't even see in the chat. Wow. Okay. So I'm going to have to do this again and then we'll edit this for the podcast later.
Okay. I guess I'm not the only one then.
Yeah. No. And I just looked into the comment section and I saw that audio. It looks like it was just a simple fix. The plug had gotten loose. Okay. Thanks guys for the comments. I finally saw that. Okay. So let's do the introduction again so that you know who Mary Grace is. Joining me tonight is spiritual counselor and parapsychologist Mary Grace. Years ago, Mary was in a desperate state when suddenly she met with a brush with death. Caused by exhaustion and drug use, it altered her relationship with herself, reality as she knew it, and her higher power. Her website is giftsofgraceministry.org. Mary Grace is the founder of Gifts of Grace Ministry. She represents educational workshops and lectures nationally on paranormal, supernatural, mystical, and near-death phenomena. She provides a unique perspective on spirituality by integrating parapsychology with Christian theology, spiritualism, mysticism, and Catholicism. In 2001, Mary Grace had a near-death experience that profoundly changed her life and set her on the spiritual path. Mary says everyone can stay connected with loved ones in heaven because loved ones never die. Mary Grace holds a BA in psychology and sociology from the State University of New York at Geneseo, where she also studied parapsychology. She is a member of the Parapsychological Association, the International Association of Near-Death Studies, and the Institute of Noetic Sciences. These are all organizations many of you know. She is also the founder of the Finger Lakes UFO Meetup and a member of the Rochester and Buffalo UFO groups, which is to say she is a fellow UFO New Yorker enthusiast. Hey, Mary, welcome to Mystic Lounge. How are you?
I'm great. I'm excited to be here, Alan, and I wanted to thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my passion for the paranormal.
Yeah, thank you. Well, so do you think that it's fair to say what one reads in religious literature, mythology, religion, you know, whatever you want to call it, in scriptures and text, that can be considered paranormal? Supernatural?
Definitely. I love a quote from Sylvia Brown. She said, if you took all the supernatural, paranormal material out of the Bible, you would have nothing left but the covers.
Yeah, that's great. And in the spirit of tonight, Genghis Khan in the comments says, Alan probably said some very important things other than Mary Grace's bio and my promotion of alien coffee bean. No, Genghis, not yet, at least. Right. But Mary already is getting us started on that path because she has been through Mary, I'll let you tell the story, but I just, you know, I finished your book, Hope and Healing for the Hurting Soul, which isn't out yet. So everyone keep that in the back of your mind. And it's a really, really uplifting read. It's a series of short stories that Mary had written. So Mary, why don't you take us to the beginning of that journey, much of what you share in your book, that had that profound change in your life?
Well, and I want to say, first of all, the book will be available. I'm sending out pre-published manuscripts. I'm still waiting for a publisher, but it is available. And so, yeah, if you're interested, just shoot me an email, give me a call. Glad to give you a signed copy. But how one of my first, what started me on the spiritual path, and I wrote this short story, and it was also in my first book, The Communion of Saints, is when my mother came to visit me 2 months after she died. And she came what is known as a dream visit. And in this dream visit, I was asleep. My body was asleep, but I thought I was wide awake. And I was standing in my bedroom, and I was unpacking boxes of was her belongings. And it was after her funeral, and this was in my dream state. And I reached into one of the boxes, and I took out two lit candles, a red one and a blue one. And I thought to myself, how odd to have lit candles packed in a box, right? Mm-hmm. And then I turned to set them on the dresser, and I thought, well, this is weird. And I turned around, and all of a sudden I saw my mother. And I said, Mom, this can't be you because you're dead. And she smiled and looked at me and simply said, I'm here for you now, Mary. And with that, I just threw my arms around her, and she held me, and she rocked me. The next thing I knew, I was like sitting in her lap in a rocking chair, and she was rocking me back and forth and stroking my hair and telling me everything was going to be all right. Everything was going to be all right. And she was able to console me from the other side. And as she was saying this, I started crying, tears of happiness, tears of joy to be reunited with her. And then the next thing I know, I woke up in my bed. And my tears soon turned to sobs. I'm crying out loud. And I woke up my husband, who's next to me. He's like, what's wrong? What's wrong? And I'm like, it's Mom. It's Mom. She was here. She's just here. And I could still feel her arms around me, still feel her presence. And I said, oh my God, Mom is not dead. And that experience changed the course of my life. And I vowed to do whatever it would take to learn how to communicate with her, stay in touch with her, because I knew she was still a part of my life and she always would be.
Mm-hmm. So this preceded your near-death experience?
Correct.
Okay. So having an experience like that, were you able to hold on to it as you were struggling with your, you had physical ailments, mm-hmm. you had addiction, which I think was somewhat of a side effect of that. Or at least that's how it sounded to me. And so then you come to a very desperate place all along. Did you keep that memory, that moment in your mind?
Oh, definitely. Between, it was almost a year, 8 months between my mom's death and mine. Mm-hmm. And in that time, I just started reading books and learning all I could on how to communicate with spirit. And everything I read said, meditation, meditation, meditation. So I took up meditation, and I was reading a book by John Edward, I think it was One Last Time, and just simple exercises on how to communicate. And I was doing these guided meditations in his book. So I tried that. I meditated and, you know, just set intention and, okay, I want to see Mom. And next thing I knew, my mom appeared before me. Again, we kind of met in some sort of space in between. And she was sitting on a bench and I was sitting next to her. And again, I just said, oh my God, Mom, you're here. You're here. Only this time I wasn't sleeping. I was conscious. I was meditating, you know, in that alpha state. And I thought, well, geez, you know, it only lasted a few seconds. And I started sobbing. I came out of my meditation. And I said, but wow, this isn't very hard. And when you think about it, telepathy is our first language. It's the language that we have before we come here in a physical being. It's the language we have when we return. And it's the language we use all the time when we're here, often not realizing it consciously, but often, you know, picking up on people's cues, knowing if somebody's mad at you when you walk into the room, and or if something's wrong with your child, even though they might be 100 miles away. So we use telepathy all the time. It's very natural. One of the natural things that it is for us to do is to pray. And it's just a form of telepathy. We don't question whether or not we're being heard. We just kind of assume, well, sometimes we might question whether we're being heard. But, you know, we continue to pray.
I think that's healthy, right? It's healthy to question it a little bit.
Healthy to question it.
Yeah.
I wrote a little story on that. My God, why? And so I was able to maintain that connection with my mother, and that grew stronger after she died, because when we can do that, and one of the things I like to teach people is how we can stay connected to loved ones in heaven without the use of a medium, or, you know, we can do all this ourselves. And when all, you know, just using simple signs, or asking for signs, but that will often strengthen your relationship. I mean, I was one of six children, my mother, you know, six adult children when she died. So, it's not like I lived with her. She didn't live far, but you don't have a lot of time, you know, with your parent or loved one. But after they're gone, it's like, boy, you've got their undivided attention. You know, it's like just having someone there all the time, which is
it's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. You don't have to wait for them to be home. You don't have to wait for them to be in a good mood or to be in a certain place to meet up, or you don't have to schedule an appointment in your book. You can just, anytime, anywhere.
And what was what was the sign that you got from your mother?
Oh yeah, there was another story I wrote, another short story. It was interesting. Yeah, 2 months. It was right around the time of my visitation from my mom, 2 months after she died. And I have to begin this story by saying when she was, she had cancer. And the last couple months of her life, she had hospice, in-home hospice, so we were all able to be around her. It was nice. But while she was at home, we dying, we had a cardinal would come to the window every day, and he would kind of like bat his wings against the window and smash into it. And this went on and on. Day after day, we put things in the windows to kind of discourage him, and it didn't matter. We took, you know, the signs and things down from the window, and this went on for well over a month every day. This one cardinal crashing himself into the window, and the day Mom died, it was on March 12th, 2001, the cardinal did not appear, and he did not come back. And I always felt that he had taken my mom's soul to heaven somehow. You know, there was a connection there, a very strong connection. And then 2 months after she died, and I was, you know, grieving terribly, and a friend recommended that maybe I should plant a memorial garden for my mom to help me, you know, for good therapy, to help me with my grieving and to be physically active. So that's what I did. And I spent months planning and planting in the springtime and getting it all ready. And then it was finally Mother's Day, I think it was in May. And I had this stepping stone I had given, those stepping stones you put in your garden. I had one I had given Mom to for her on Mother's Day years earlier. And it said, the secret to my garden is but one word, love. And there's a connection there with the book Secret Garden. She loved to read it to us. Mm-hmm. So on Mother's Day, the 2 months after she died, I took this stepping stone and I put it in the new garden that was now in my backyard. And I sat down on the park bench and it was a sunny day. And I was just hit with this grief that this was the first Mother's Day without my mom. And I set this stepping stone in the ground and I said, Mom, I hope you like your secret garden. Happy Mother's Day. And with that, a red cardinal came down and landed on the branch right above me and started singing his song. And as I like to hear it, it was cheer, cheer up, cheer up, cheer up, cheer up. And I got the sign and I just knew. I got the just knowing. I felt her presence. Mm-hmm. And I just knew that was a sign from my mom. And I just felt elated. And at the end, I just felt a sense of peace knowing that she was there with me and she was still a part of my life.
I mean, how do we know when it's our deeper self, our subconscious or unconscious mind? Well, no, subconscious mind that is desiring something so badly that we sort of manifest it. Which is to say, is the sign from her? Is it from you?
Well, in a situation like that, it's like when I get a message from somebody, I say it came out of left field. Now, mm-hmm. I certainly didn't go to the garden with an intention of seeing a cardinal. That was the last thing on my mind. Mm-hmm. The cardinal came out of left field, as I like to say. So when you get a sign, a lot of times, you know, you might be looking for a sign or waiting for one, but when it comes, it's like when you weren't even thinking about it, but you were probably thinking of that loved one at the time. But there are a number of ways that you can tell when you do get a sign from a loved one. I like to look for four things to happen. And you can ask for a specific sign, or you might just be a sign that, you know, it's something that's strongly connected to your loved one that's passed, their favorite hobby or sport, something they were invested in. With my mom, she didn't have a passion for cardinals, but definitely that, you know, I just immediately knew that was its sign. So one of the four things to look for when you get a sign, number one, you get the physical sign. The rainbow, the bird, whatever it is, the picture falls off the wall. And number two, you feel a presence. And what do I mean by feeling a presence? That's when you feel somebody is around you. And what you're feeling is their electromagnetic energy. And often the hair will stand up on your arm, or you feel it prickly in the back of the neck. And that's what you're feeling. It's electromagnetic energy. And so then that's the second thing. You feel a presence. And then you get what I call the just knowing. It's your loved one shouting at you telepathically in your head. It's me. It's me. This is me. You know, it's mom. It's whoever. And with that telepathic message, you just know without a shadow of a doubt, and no one's going to tell you differently, that wasn't a sign from that person. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth thing to look for when you do get a sign is usually you become emotional. Now, it can be tears of joy. It can be tears of sorrow. Often depends on how long the person has passed. Bittersweet tears, mixed emotions. And in the end, you're usually left with a sense of peace. And those are the things to look for. Now, I like to say, now, every time I see a cardinal, that doesn't mean it's a sign from my mom.
Right.
But every time I see a cardinal, I think of my mom. Mm-hmm. And I'm an avid bird watcher, feed the birds every day. And every day we have a cardinal that comes. And even my husband says it now and get up in the morning. Hi, mom. When you see the cardinal, hi, mom. Now, there's one way to maintain that connection, because when you have an emotional and psychological bond with somebody and you maintain that, then you develop a psychic bond, and that lays the foundation for after-death communication, which can be a sign, it can be a voice, or many other things. So maintaining that connection with a loved one after they pass helps healing. That's the importance of it, is to help healing. And one way it helps to heal is it makes you feel like, number one, you've got your own guardian angel, someone looking over you and protecting you, mm-hmm. someone to talk to, someone to be your therapist. You know, you don't need to make an appointment or pay any money. Just talk to that person whenever you want. And also it lessens the fear of death. When you stay connected with someone on the other side, you kind of actually start to look forward to being with them again.
Well, I suppose like a real therapist, they're accused of doing a lot of listening. And so I suppose how different is it, right?
Not much.
But if you have had a conversation with a loved one and you keep talking to them, how can they possibly give you advice? What's the way in which they respond to you?
Well, you can just simply ask for a sign. And another story I wrote is one time I was having, when I was still in the mental health field before mm-hmm. I retired, I was thinking it was time for me to leave. I was working on my first book, getting into my spiritual work, and just, you know, administrative wise, it wasn't getting too much fun anymore. Mm-hmm. Love my clients, love my job, my work. So I felt it was time for me to move on, but I didn't, it was like a leap of faith to leave my job and an income to work on my book full time and my spiritual work. So I asked my mom for a sign. This was on a Friday. I was like fed up with work. I asked my mom for, I said, Mom, you got to give me a sign. And it has to have something to do with roses. Now, Rose was her middle name, and that was another sign that, you know, we connected with was with roses. So I said, it has to have something to do with roses, and it can't be a single rose. It has to be a whole bouquet, a whole pile of roses, and I need that sign by Monday. And it was 2 days later on a Sunday, I went to visit my Aunt Marie in Gates, who I wrote a whole story on, and I got out of my car. And there was my cousin Dee standing outside of the house. And my cousin Dee was from Colorado. I didn't know she was in town. And I went to hug her. And just short of hugging her, I see she had a shirt with embroidered rose on it. And I was like, wow, why are you here? And why are you wearing that rose shirt? And she explained to me that she came home to do a weekend with her sisters, her four sisters. Mm-hmm. And she had the shirt special made. So there's four roses on each shirt. And so then I walked into the house with her, and there was three other sisters sitting on the couch, all with their rose shirts on. So the total of 16 roses. And it was like, oh my God, I got my sign from Mom. It wasn't a single rose. It was a whole bouquet. So that's how you have to kind of be open as to how you get the signs. And I got the knowing, and the next day I went to work and I put in my 2 weeks notice.
And it worked. Did it work out?
Yes, it worked out great. Yeah. I wrote a book.
So that, to me, that's more of the proof right there, you know, because if it didn't work out, if your life fell apart, then I would say, what kind of sign is that? but I guess it is that confluence, right? It's like, so you're saying that when you know someone is communicating with you and you know it's a sign, you're getting those four elements mm-hmm. that are happening at almost simultaneously. So it's that confluence, which becomes less and less probable that it is just a random coincidence mm-hmm. that you're getting this feeling, you're seeing this sign, and you're getting the energy running through your body. I do wonder what that psychic feeling is. I'm trying to think, have I had that feeling before? What does that feel like when you feel like their spirit is speaking to you and saying, it's me? What does that feel like, separate from that electrical feeling that you're talking about?
I I guess you'll need, I just call it the just knowing. It's the just knowing.
Is it like a welling up? Is it like a wave of light and heavy, or, you know, like,
well, because when you feel you're feeling the presence at the same time, and you might not get mm-hmm. all four signs, but you might get the just knowing, and maybe you don't get the sign, but there's synchronicities or things that happen together that really make you believe and get the just knowing, because it's just a thought. It's a telepathic thought. And it's just like if you see someone you recognize walking down the street, mm-hmm. you look at them and you say, oh, well, you just know it's them.
Yeah.
You just know. You know what he has to explain. But a telepathic thought or someone is the same way. It's spirit recognition. I wrote this in a poem. Spirit recognition comes not from the eyes, but from somewhere much deeper inside. And when a lot of times people say, you know, spirits, like, you know, how do you recognize other spirits when you're on the other side? Well, sometimes they don't have a face. They might be a light being. They might appear to look totally different, but when you see them, there's an instant recognition.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
At one point, you were, you know, drinking a lot, taking painkillers and that sort of thing. What was the impetus for that addiction? Was that something that was before your illnesses, or did it follow your physical debilitations?
Well, to tell you the truth, I've been drinking since the age of 14. So that was long before my illnesses. And so that was an addiction. Mm. And I didn't think it was at the time until I died. And then I was diagnosed as like the age of 23, I believe, with a seizure disorder, epilepsy. Mm-hmm. And then a few years later, I was diagnosed with lupus. With the autoimmune disease. So I was on a lot of medications to treat that and to treat the pain and other symptoms and isolation from not being able to be in community or to work for long periods of time. It was my way of coping was more drugs and more alcohol.
Mm-hmm. And then it led you to a point where you were driving and you pulled over into a parking lot, and then this is when you had your near-death experience, right?
Yeah. I can't go into detail about the whole experience because it's a mm-hmm. whole nother show, but I'll tell you briefly. Sure, and I wrote in detail in the first book. It's a long story in more detail. My second book, I got a shorter version. Mm-hmm. But I got to the point in my life and I wanted to end my life, but I knew that I couldn't, because I somehow knew, just knowing, that I had made a contract with God. And if I took my own life, I just have to come back here and do it all over again. So I didn't want that, and I felt trapped. So one day when I'd had enough, I was dying, but I wasn't dead. And I was living, but I didn't feel alive. So it was November 1st, I went to my mother's grave and on my knees, and got on a cold, chilly grave on my knees, and I prayed to God to take me home. And I was like, basically, you know, decide what to do. Basically, shit or get off the pot, God. You got to decide what to do. Either heal me or you take me home. You know, I just can't take this suffering anymore. Yeah. And after about an hour or two of feeling very frustration, not feeling like anyone was talking to me or getting any answers, I went home. And it was the next day my prayer was answered. And I was actually driving in the car. I'd gone to the city of Rochester. I wanted to buy a book from John Edward. That was one last time I wanted to go to the bookstore. So I drove to Rochester. And you know what it's like when you get here, this is a sign, a song on the radio, or maybe it could be even in church or somewhere else, but you hear a song and the words to that song just speak to your soul. And you know that's exactly what you needed to hear at that time in that moment. And this song came on the radio, and it was a song, Why Me, by the Styx. Remember the rock group, the Styx of the 80s? And that was me in the cemetery the night before. Why me, God, why me? So when that song came on the radio the next day while I'm driving my car, I just knew that was my sign from God. And I was just so happy. It just struck me. It hit me with such a force. And I just started crying. Thank you, God. Thank you. As I'm driving down the expressway, I'm sobbing and I'm saying, thank you, God. Thank you. For the sign, I would continue to drive, and I was near the exit from the expressway to board his bookstore. So I was able to get off the exit and pull my car into the bookstore parking lot, park the car, turned it off. And you
were actually on your way to buy John Edwards' book.
Yes, right? I was on my way to buy his book. And I parked the car, and I think I noticed it was like 6 o'clock or something. And I said, thank you, God, thank you. I'm still crying. And I turned off the car and I put my head back against the seat. And the next thing I know, I was floating up out of my body and going into the light. And a lot of things happened, and I came back 45 minutes later.
Yeah.
And my world had changed. My entire world had changed. I didn't realize at first. It took a long time to realize all the changes. But the first thing I noticed was when I got out of the car to go into the bookstore, because I like after evaluating myself, I came back. I guess I'm okay. I don't know what happened, but I guess I'm okay. I found out later, apparently while I was driving down 390, I had cardiac arrest from a hole I had in my heart. And so that's why I found out later. But when I got out of the car, I said, I might as well go and get my book. I drove all the way to Rochester for this. And I started walking across the parking lot, only I wasn't walking. I was floating. And then I was like, I felt like I was floating. And I got into the bookstore and I started looking around. It's like, everything was strange. It's like I was looking through the world with rose-colored glasses, and I look at the other people in the store, and I just felt this incredible love for everybody. And it was like, wow. And, you know, it was only with time that I realized how much my life had totally, totally changed from that day, and immediately quit doing drugs and alcohol. And within a few weeks, I knew that I was totally healed of lupus and epilepsy, two incurable diseases, and went off all 26 medications I was on, including drugs and alcohol. So
that's just astounding. A lot of people do have mystical experiences, and they are finally able to rip themselves free of addiction. However, because you can explain that in a multitude of psychological ways, the lupus, like, gone, that's astounding. So when you went to your doctors and talked to them about this, I'm assuming they ran tests. What did they say?
Yeah, I had all four different doctors. My immunologist, they do a test called anti-nuclear antibody test for lupus. And I had my brain waves, my neurologist, I had my EKG done or EEG done. And went to my GP, and everything was normal. And my one doctor just said, I don't know what you're doing, but whatever it is, keep doing it. So it's like,
yeah, don't keep doing that though. I think a one-time deal with death is good enough.
But I Yeah. I had a new addiction, Alan. I know a lot of people don't understand this. Mm-hmm. I changed one addiction for another. And I found out that in meditation, just by simply meditating, I could go back into that light that I experienced during my near-death experience. And when you're in that light and feeling all that love, I think that's what all our addictions come from, is this longing to feel that ecstasy and feel that love and feel that belonging and acceptance that we're missing here in the physical world. And when you can learn to, you know, go then and meditate and have conscious contact with God and have that experience, that, like I said, it just became my new addiction, and it was free. It didn't cost anything. And it was a million times better than any drug I'd ever taken on this planet.
Yeah, that I've heard that before. And A.J. Rasmussen in the documentary Half Light, talks about that feeling of just warmth and home. And she just really wanted to share that with the rest of the world. What is your conception of God when you say God?
The source. The everything. I like the way, actually, it was Deepak Chopra, they explained it best, I thought. And he's like, God is in the spaces. And what he means by space is when you get down into the atomic level of things, or you get into quantum physics, and you look, and there's nothing but light. And you understand that light is God. It's a source. It's a force like gravity. And it's in everything. God is everything, including trees and rocks. And it doesn't matter what it is, because everything in this world is made up of atoms and molecules. And the space in between is the force. And I like to say, in Star Wars, and they say the force, may the force be with you. A lot of people don't know that George Lucas wrote Star Wars, he had a near-death experience, and he wrote that afterwards. And his description of the force, instead of saying, may God be with you,
he
basically said, may the force be with you. And you can substitute those two things. So when you like watch Star Wars, and the force is the good against the evil. So it is like gravity, in that it affects everything, and it's within every cell of our body, which is why, people can heal.
Yeah.
At the cellular level.
He was in a car accident, right? A very serious car accident. He ended up in the hospital, George Lucas. Isn't that correct?
I don't know. You know, it's funny. I don't know how he died.
Yeah, because it changed changed the trajectory of his career.
Yeah.
And he went into filmmaking after that. A lot of people do come out of those experiences like, whoa, what direction am I going in? I needed to change gears and, take a different exit off this highway I've been on. That, I guess, is a similar experience that you had.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, most people that have had near-death experience say it was needed. It was like a course correction. You were way off your path. And then when you're left with this expanded level of consciousness, being connected, what they call unity consciousness, knowing that you're one with everyone, which is kind of really hard to deal with. It's like, what do I do with this? And what do I do with this overwhelming feeling of love that I had, that I love so much? It was like my heart would pound. My chest would hurt. I love so much. And all I could think of is that movie Alien, when the alien comes ripping out of the guy's chest. It's like, my heart is
That's
just
what you're feeling.
And yeah. I was like, and it dawned on me, the physical body is not meant to take such a force. It's not meant to take such a force. It's like, what do you do with it? There's only one thing you can do with it, Alan, and that is to give it away. You have to give it away in any way you can. Whatever service, any little small corner of the world, whether it's just helping a neighbor, or whatever way you can, in a million different ways. Just a smile to somebody is you just, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% there. I really do. I think, and it was funny, I was actually thinking about this today because the Christmas season is, you know, for some of us, it's like, yay, it's Christmas. And other people are like, oh, good God, I can't do it again. And I was thinking just that because I was in the subway today and this guy was playing the sax, cool. The Christmas music, and I was just loving it. You know, I was like, this is great. But I was thinking that, you know, sometimes doing that little extra effort of smiling at someone and saying thank you, you don't know who you're going to say that to that day that could just completely jolt their state of mind into a healthier place. It can happen because I know it's happened to me. It's happened to all of us where someone just treats you differently in that, and all of a sudden, boom. And my wife and I were watching the documentary Harry and Meghan on Netflix.
Okay, I'll have to catch that one.
yeah, and you know, all the stuff that they're dealing with, and they said something I thought was really interesting. Like they're exhausted, they're tired, they're doing the tours, you know, the royal tours around Australia or South Africa or wherever it is. But one thing that they said, and it's very generous of spirit, and I don't know if that came from the royal family institution philosophy or from them, but it was like, you're tired, you're exhausted, but that moment that you're meeting and shaking hands with that person, that's a moment for them. And just, you know, giving them that little bit of attention and kindness, a smile, a shaking of the hand, it's for them, you know, and that's, there's something kind of beautiful in that.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite things to do is you're standing in line in the grocery store and the person ahead of you is giving the teller a hard time, yes. You know, yeah. And they're just miserable. And the first thing I do when I get up there, I'm like, I'm so sorry. It's like, you seem to be having a bad day, you know. Yeah. I really appreciate, you know, and then I usually ask them if it's busy or how they're mm-hmm. doing. And yeah, just, it's the little things that matter. You don't need to do mm-hmm. change the entire world.
Selflessly to a degree, of course. I mean, you have to take care of yourself, but like sometimes you might smile and be kind to that cashier and they might just still look at you kind of stone cold, hand you a receipt, you know, but you don't know what's going behind the mask. Mm-hmm. And so what you, that interaction there, that something else might be going, they might actually appreciate it, but just are, you know, kind of shut down and closed off. They can't really express it. So I would say to those who are, you know, sharing kindness, you can't always expect it to be returned immediately, at least, you know.
Well, one of the big things about the life review and in your death experience, you heard of the life review, and mm-hmm. that's the thing that really, really changed my life, because you see in your life review, when you do give that little smile to somebody, and help someone, it not only affects them directly and you see it, it also has a ripple effect, and you'll see the effect for like the next two or three people. So maybe you didn't get much back from the cashier, but right. She goes home and says, you know what, I had one nice thing happen to me today, and this one person just was kind and to me. And so then you have the ripple effect, so you understand how it affects everybody. And in reverse, this is what really curbs you from being judgmental or saying anything negative about anybody, because mm-hmm. when you do, I mean, all this stuff comes back to you in your life review. So really, really, it can alter how you behave on a daily basis in your life. Mm-hmm. So someone is really, really mean to you and really does something hurtful, it's like, I have to forgive them. I can't react badly. I can't say a negative word. I can't judge them, because if I do, it's going to come back to me in my life review. And not only that, I'm going to see if I said something mean to somebody and then they mm-hmm. went home and they kicked the dog and the dog went and bit somebody else, or they, you know, they hit their wife or something. You're going to see all the ripple effect of when you do something negative or say something negative to somebody. So that whole life review, it is such a powerful experience. Such a powerful experience.
I was raised Catholic as well. And there's some things in the scripture that I have issue with, particularly in the Old Testament. But there's something that you pointed out that I hadn't considered before. Well, first of all, one, I agree with you 100%. One of the things that is said in the Bible, and I don't know who says it. I think is it maybe Paul or is it Jesus? But the kingdom of heaven lives in all of you or each of you, or
it's within you. Yes.
Within you. Right.
Jesus said,
okay. So that always resonated with me because it was another way. Cause he also was not big on temples. Right. So
right.
His philosophy seemed to be that God was in everybody equally, right? Not just the prophets, not just him, but everybody. But the one thing that always bothered me is the metaphor of like the lambs. And so there's a quote that you mentioned in your book, "The lion lies down with the lamb." Now, I've always interpreted this as being just mindlessly following someone. And I never liked that because we use that to insult people now, right? Contemporaneously, we say, oh, they're a sheep. You know, they're just going along with whatever this news station is saying, or that person is saying, or, you know, this preacher is saying, or whatever it is, they're just going along without consciously considering
mm-hmm.
the situation they're in, what information is being fed to them. But then you said that the way you see it is that the lion represents the ego and the lamb represents the soul. Can you talk about that a little bit more?
I'm glad you brought that up. I forgot about that. And it was a story I was writing about. I'm trying to remember now what it was. I think it was with COVID, right? Yeah, I think it was a story I wrote about COVID. And as we get through this difficult time, and one story I did in 2020, and I did a follow-up story, is through our common struggles, we learn compassion and we learn kindness for each other. And when this period is over, of course, now we've kind of got through that, but you know, we're still struggling very much so. But when we get to that the next higher level dimension, or we ascend to whatever where our human race is going next, mm-hmm. that the fear will be gone. And the fear is the ego is the fear. And then when the fear is gone, then the lion and lamb can be together because there is no fear. So your soul is all that's left, you know, and that's kind of the metaphor. The lion and the lamb is always like peace, kind of represents peace on earth. Mm-hmm. I think when you talk about sheep, I think it's I always call it sheeple, right? Sheeple,
you're right, just
following,
right, exactly.
You're following the herd. But in you know, in the Jesus's example of the lamb was always the lamb and lion, a sign of peace.
Mm. Well, I mean, Jesus does mention being like sheep, you know, to I don't know if he meant to him directly, but to God, right? And to basically follow what I'm saying. But I always kind of took that a little offensively.
You know,
like, I'm not going to just go along with what you say. Let me think about this first.
Yeah, but he's a good shepherd, right? He's a good shepherd.
Yeah.
And a lot of us, we need spiritual teachers. Mm-hmm. We need people like you in the world to help guide us and help us to understand this very confusing world in the physical body, and especially, you know, the separation from each other and God as we perceive it. So I think this leads to one of my greatest tenets is just putting your trust and faith in God in whatever happens in your life, because it's one of the beauties of doing that is you don't have to know what you're doing. You don't know, have to know why it's happening to you. You just, but when you put your trust and faith in a higher power, source, infinite, intelligent, Jesus, whoever you may call it, and you understand that's where you're from and that we're just children of God. We're children of that higher power. We need guidance, just like we do from our parents. It's, you know, we call them our Father. So that's why I think Jesus said, come follow me. If you do as I'm trying to teach you, you're going to be okay. This is kind of like the handbook for your incarnation.
Incarnation. Okay. Yeah. You also, I want to quote you again here, said condemnation and punishment were concepts that did not exist within the realm and capability of this all loving presence. This was when you were having your near-death mm-hmm. experience or mystical moments, you know, mm-hmm. following that. But what I thought was really interesting, your choice of the word capability. What does that mean exactly?
And the quote again was
condemnation. Condemnation and punishment were concepts that did not exist within the realm and capability of right. this all loving presence.
Yeah. I mean, when there's nothing but love and there's no fear, mm-hmm. you are incapable of judging others, which is how I feel like I am a lot. I mean, I'm not all the time because I'm human, but when you understand that we're all children of God and we're all connected and we're all loved, and it's not, you're not a popular person to take the side of the murderer, the, you know, especially the mass murders we got, the gunmen, the people that are being killed, the person in Hollywood who maybe said something they shouldn't have said, and it's all over the news, and everyone just jumps on the bandwagon or Facebook and puts that person down. Mm-hmm. Well, I love this quote from one of my favorite books with Paul Farini, The Christ Mind. He says, it's never the man who pulls the trigger. It's the wounded boy inside.
Mm. Or wounded girl.
Yeah. Right. And so you have to understand that, you know, whatever the situation, why are people mean? Why are they this way? Well, how are they raised? You know, how were they raised? Aren't you fortunate that you had good parents or you had a solid, you know, values, that you weren't raised that way? Your parents didn't have to steal. They weren't poor. They didn't feel like they had to do all these things that made you the same way. You know, so we are blessed to live in a good situation, to have a home, and feel like we don't, you know, have to go to extremes and hurt other people because we're not in these situations. So I just, you know, I've had things happen to me where my car was stolen and things were stolen from me. And I just, you know, I felt bad for that person. I honestly felt bad because I said, if that person knew God, they would not have been able to do that.
Yeah,
and the person did not know God.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I agree with you, but I think it's an interpretation of God, because I know people that are atheists that are loving people. Mm-hmm. And so if you replace kindness, love, compassion with the word God, it's like they're tuned into that energy, that mm-hmm. space, even if they don't believe in a, you know, specific
right.
you know, identity of a higher power or God. And do you think that those people who don't believe in any kind of actual deity, you know, will have a chance to go to heaven in your idea of what that is?
Well, sure, because it's just, we're here to, and Neil Donald Walsh talks a lot about this in his books, Conversation with God, is like, we're here, and a lot of other spiritual teachers here, to remember, you know, things that we already know. Okay. We know, and our, you know, our soul is much bigger than our body. Mm-hmm. And we have a higher self. And on the soul level, we know all there is to know about, you know, why we're here and our purpose and all these other things. We know God. But every time we come back into the physical body, or we're, you know, not in meditation or whatever, we forget, and we're here to remember and reconnect. So whether you choose to be, you know, I believe a lot in Life Between Lives, work of Robert Schwartz and Michael Newton, is how we choose the challenges we want in this life, to learn how to grow and learn from it. And partly it's based on karma. So why would someone choose to be atheist? Why would someone choose to be a priest? Why would someone choose to be disabled or poor or rich? With each one of these things, there's challenges that come with that. And it's all about reconnecting and love. What it comes down to is, you know, finding the love in yourself. Because we can't reconnect with others if you don't love yourself.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it just comes to healing shame and guilt and things that may have been carried over from a previous life.
Who do you think Christmas is for?
I did write a story about that.
And we only have a minute left, so just
Christmas is for the poor, it's for the hurting, it's for those who've lost loved ones, and this is a time of hope. And I know for a lot of people, if you're grieving and you're suffering from the loss of a loved one, this is a time when you can give of yourself. Mm-hmm. And give something to somebody else, because as much as you might be hurting, there's someone else that's hurting too. And maybe you can share your pain with others and helping. So, and this is just, it's an easy time to do that. Buy a gift for somebody, buy a gift for the person that you're missing this year. Go out, shop for them, buy a gift or make a gift and either give it away or give it to someone who needs it.
Yeah.
So that's who I think Christmas is for. That's what Jesus was for.
Yeah, it's a really great suggestion. I like that idea. So for everybody listening, if you want to find out more about Mary Grace and her works, you can go to giftsofgraceministry.org. And if you'd like to get a special order of her book, Hope and Healing for the Hurting Soul, Short Stories to Lift Your Spirit, which indeed it does, please contact her through her website. And do you have an email? Mary, that people can contact you?
Yes, it's mgrace, it's mgrace-888@outlook.com. And I just want to mention, there's step-by-step instructions on how to stay connected with loved ones in heaven in my first book, Communion of Saints, Talking to God and Grandma. And this is available on Amazon. So both of my books were really written for people that are hurting. And suffering, especially suffering from the loss of a loved one, and how we can stay connected.
Yeah, I really love that title. And Grandma. It's very catchy. Oh, you have a cat in the background. I love it. Who's the visitor?
I don't know. It just walked in.
On the other side.
On the other side.
Yeah.
I think it's Mimi or Smokey. I've got three black cats.
Oh, that's so cute.
Not have the door locked, but... I got the window open a little bit, so he's trying to get out.
I love it. All right. Well, that's a great way to end the show. Mary, thank you so much. I really appreciate this. Happy holidays to you. And I'm sure you and I will be in touch.
All right. Well, thank you for this opportunity. It's been a lot of fun. I really appreciate the opportunity to share and help others.
All right. Thank you. All right. And thank you all for joining us for this episode of Mystic Lounge. This is Alan B. Smith. Thank you to the UnX Network, Race Hobbs, Margie K, who do a phenomenal job over there. And I want to wish you all a happy holiday season. Lots of warmth, peace, and love to the max. And don't forget to give that love away too. We have one more guest for this season, Julia Cannon, next week. And that'll be earlier in the week, not on the normal Thursday night. And then I'll be taking somewhat of a hiatus. So going into January, February, and March, I will most likely be doing 2, maybe 3 shows a month. And that includes Mystic Lounge podcast and Coffee and UFOs podcast. So that might be 1 episode of each per month because I've decided to take on another project on my own, but I really want to take my time on this, and it is UFO related. I'm not sure where it's going to go, so I don't want to say what it is exactly in case it doesn't turn out to be, as I visualize it now. But I'll keep you updated on that project. And after those first few months, once I've had a chance to really dig into that research, then I will start transitioning back to doing more shows. But of course, as always, will be the random pop-up show as well. So if you haven't subscribed yet to this channel, please do. It's youtube.com/mysticlounge. Please click the subscribe button and the notification bell so you don't miss those pop-up episodes. All right, that's it, everyone. Thank you so much. Peace and love. And until next time, live in the mystery.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.